The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the AFB's holiday email and various websites on various topics. So first up from the AFB, as 2025 draws to a close, we are reflecting on a remarkable year and the ripple effect your generosity has created. From advancing disability-inclusive AI research to empowering students through the AFB Scholars Program, every success began with supporters like you. Below, you will find a look back at AFB's 2025 milestones, highlights made possible by your generosity, offering a snapshot of just how far we have come together over the past year. Thank you for helping us move boldly into what comes next. A year of impact, a vision for tomorrow. AFB's 2025 milestones. January, AFB releases phase one of our AI study, Empowering or Excluding? New Research and Principles for Inclusive AI. February, AFB launches our research webinar series, bringing research to life through conversations on expanding access and opportunity. March, New York Times capsule event unveils a never-before-heard Helen Keller recording, honoring AFB's legacy and future. April, Helen Keller Achievement Awards return to New York City, celebrating leaders advancing access and inclusion. June, AFB announces its first cohort of recipients in the newly launched AFB Scholars Program. 2026 Digital Accessibility Internship Cohort begins. July, AFB publishes Designing Inclusion White Paper on Blind Barbie Partnership with Mattel. New researcher joins AFB. August, AFB's Unseen Horizons documentary premieres, featuring stories of blind and low-vision West Virginians. October, second phase of national AI study completed with 1,735 participants. Results due in 2026. November, AFB Leadership Conference unites leaders across the field in Arlington, Virginia. December, AFB celebrates 25 years of Access World, highlighting innovations at the intersection of disability and technology. Look how far we've come and where we're going. Your support powers every milestone. Thank you for driving equal access forward. Each achievement has created waves of change that extend well beyond 2025. With your continued support, we can keep the ripple growing stronger in the years ahead. Will you make a gift today to help us continue creating opportunities and expanding possibilities? Hot link to donate. Thank you again for your support. Warm regards, signed Eric Bridges, President and CEO. From allaboutlawyer.com, GLP-1 lawsuit, stomach paralysis, blindness claims, and what 2,914 victims need to know about Ozempic legal case. By All About Lawyer, November 27, 2025. Nearly 500 deaths linked to GLP-1 medications like Ozempic have been reported to the FDA. Now, nearly 3,000 lawsuits are moving through federal courts as patients who trusted these blockbuster weight loss drugs face life-altering injuries they say manufacturers never properly warned them about. If you or someone you love took Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, or similar GLP-1 medications and developed severe stomach problems or sudden vision loss, you need to understand what's happening right now in one of America's fastest-growing pharmaceutical lawsuits. What is the GLP-1 lawsuit? The fast facts you need. The GLP-1 lawsuit involves thousands of people who took popular diabetes and weight loss medications, including Ozempic, Wegovy, Saxenda, Victoza, Mounjaro, Rybelsus, and Zepbound, and suffered serious health complications. As of November 2025, there are now 1,300 lawsuits pending in federal court against manufacturers Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. The central claim, these companies failed to adequately warn patients about devastating side effects, including gastroparesis, stomach paralysis, intestinal blockages, and sudden blindness. Here's what makes this lawsuit urgent. A master complaint filed in November highlighted nearly 500 deaths in the U.S. linked to semaglutide medications, including Ozempic, Wegovy, and Rybelsus, according to FDA adverse event data. The cases are consolidated in federal court in Pennsylvania under MDL 3094, multi-district litigation, which streamlines thousands of similar claims. The Ozempic GLP-1 MDL now has 2,914 pending cases, an increase of 800 new cases since August, with roughly 200 new cases added monthly. Table of contents. What is the GLP-1 lawsuit? The fast facts you need. Who's being sued? The manufacturers behind GLP-1 drugs. The legal claims. What patients are alleging. The injuries. Gastroparesis, vision loss, and other severe side effects. Gastroparesis, stomach paralysis, Nion vision loss, sudden blindness, that's spelled N-A-I-O-N. Current legal status, where the GLP-1 lawsuits stand in 2024. MDL 3094 federal court consolidation, key recent developments. Who qualifies to file a GLP-1 lawsuit? How much are GLP-1 lawsuit settlements worth? How to file a GLP-1 lawsuit, the step-by-step process. Step 1, gather your evidence. Step 2, get a free case evaluation. Step 3, file before deadlines expire. Step 4, join the federal MDL. Understanding pharmaceutical product liability law. Three types of product effects. Strict liability versus negligence. What defendants are arguing? The manufacturer's defense. Expert voices. What medical professionals are saying? Related cases. Precedent in pharmaceutical litigation. Timeline. Key dates in the GLP-1 lawsuit. Frequently asked questions about GLP-1 lawsuits. Can I sue if I only experienced mild nausea or vomiting? What if I stopped taking the medication months or years ago? Do I need to prove my doctor didn't warn me? Are gallbladder injuries eligible? What if I took a compounded version of semaglutide? How long will the lawsuit take? Will I have to testify in court? Can I still file if the statute of limitations passed? Take action. Protect your rights today. Who's being sued? The manufacturers behind GLP-1 drugs. Two pharmaceutical giants face the bulk of these lawsuits. Novo Nordisk manufactures Ozempic, diabetes treatment, off-label weight loss. Wegovy, FDA-approved weight loss. Rybelsus, oral diabetes medication. Saxenda, weight loss. Victoza, diabetes treatment. Eli Lilly manufactures Mounjaro, diabetes and weight management. Zepbound, weight loss. Trulicity, diabetes treatment. Novo Nordisk's Ozempic claims an estimated 40% of the U.S. GLP-1 market, with 38% of users primarily seeking weight loss rather than diabetes management. The legal claims, what patients are alleging. Lawsuits against GLP-1 manufacturers center on failure to warn and negligent marketing. Here's what the plaintiffs claim. Inadequate warning labels. Gastroparesis is not included on the Ozempic warning label as a risk or side effect. It's only briefly mentioned in technical sections describing how the drug works, not as a potential permanent injury. Aggressive marketing without full disclosure. The complaint details injuries such as debilitating vomiting, intestinal obstruction, gastroparesis requiring emergency care and hospitalization, vitamin deficiencies, pancreatitis, and more serious complications that patients say they were never warned about. Off-label promotion. In 2018, Novo Nordisk began mentioning weight loss in Ozempic commercials, even though the FDA had not approved the drug for this purpose, according to legal findings. Legal filings. Related lawsuit. Israeli honeypot lawsuit. FBI director's girlfriend Alexis Wilkins is remanded for 15. That's not related. The injuries, gastroparesis, vision loss, and other severe side effects. Gastroparesis, stomach paralysis. Gastroparesis, often called delayed gastric emptying, prevents the stomach's nerves and muscles from working properly, resulting in food sitting too long in the stomach. Symptoms include severe uncontrollable vomiting lasting weeks or months, chronic nausea and inability to keep food down, dangerous weight loss and malnutrition, need for feeding tubes or hospitalization, permanent digestive dysfunction. The shocking reality, probably 1% or less, experience gastroparesis, the slowing down of the movement in the stomach permanently, according to a former Harvard diabetes expert. That risk is often not disclosed to patients before prescribing. Nion vision loss, sudden blindness. NAION, non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, is a sudden loss of vision caused by reduced blood flow to the optic nerve. It's the second most common optic neuropathy and often results in permanent blindness. The research is alarming. Patients with type 2 diabetes who took semaglutide-containing medications had more than a four-fold higher risk for developing Nion, compared with patients not on a GLP-1 agonist. Overweight people who took semaglutide for weight loss had a more than sevenfold higher risk. In June 2025, the World Health Organization, WHO, warned that semaglutide drugs such as Ozempic, Wegovy, and Rybelsus may rarely cause Nion. Other reported injuries include ileus bowel obstruction, intestinal blockages requiring surgery, pulmonary aspiration during anesthesia, deep vein thrombosis, DVT, pancreatitis, gallbladder injuries, Wernicke's encephalopathy, a brain disorder, severe malnutrition requiring hospitalization. Approximately 24,500 patients visited the emergency room in 2022 and 2023 due to side effects of Ozempic and other popular semaglutide weight loss drugs. Of these ER visits, nearly 70% involved gastrointestinal issues. Legal status. Where are the GLP-1 lawsuits stand right now? MDL 3094 Federal Court Consolidation. The United States Judicial Panel on Multidistrict Litigation found that the actions in this MDL involve common questions of fact and that centralization in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania will serve the convenience of the parties and witnesses. Judge Karen S. Marston, M-A-R-S-T-O-N, presides over the consolidated federal litigation in Philadelphia. Key developments. Science Day, September 2024, the parties provided the court with an overview of medical and scientific issues associated with GLP-1 medications and the injuries alleged by plaintiffs. Discovery limitations. In October 2024, Judge Marston ruled to limit discovery in the GLP-1 litigation, allowing only a narrow focus on FDA-approved warning labels and potential preemption issues. Vision loss track. Plaintiff's leadership submitted a motion requesting the formal creation of a vision injury track within MDL 3094. Over 140 cases in the MDL now involve claims of partial or total blindness. Bellwether trials. The first GLP-1 lawsuits are unlikely to go before the federal juries until at least 2027 due to complex scientific and legal issues that must be resolved first. Who qualifies to file a GLP-1 lawsuit? You may be eligible to join the litigation if you'd used a GLP-1 medication such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Rybelsus from Novo Nordisk, Mounjaro, Zepbound, or Trulicity from Eli Lilly, or Saxenda or Victoza from Novo Nordisk. You suffered injuries, documented. Gastroparesis or stomach paralysis confirmed by gastric emptying studies. Nion or sudden vision loss diagnosed by an ophthalmologist. Ileus or intestinal blockage requiring hospitalization. Severe vomiting, dehydration, or malnutrition needing medical intervention. Pulmonary aspiration during surgery. Other serious gastrointestinal complications. If you have medical documentation, prescription records showing GLP-1 use, medical records confirming your diagnosis, treatment records, hospitalizations, ER visits, specialist consultations, evidence the injury occurred while using or shortly after stopping the medication. Many patients continue to experience symptoms long after discontinuing the medication. What matters is whether your medical records show that the onset of stomach paralysis or chronic vomiting followed GLP-1 exposure. How much are GLP-1 lawsuit settlements worth? While no settlements have been reached yet, legal experts are evaluating potential compensation based on medical expenses, lost income, pain and suffering, punitive damages. In case of egregious corporate misconduct, courts may award punitive damages to punish manufacturers under and deter similar behavior. One client mentioned receiving a fair six-figure settlement in a related product liability case, though specific GLP-1 settlement amounts haven't been publicly disclosed yet. Skipping ahead to the timeline, key dates in the GLP-1 lawsuit. August 2023, the first lawsuit related to GLP-1-induced stomach paralysis was filed. February 2024, at least 55 lawsuits were consolidated into an MDL in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. September 2023, FDA added ileus warnings to Ozempic labels. January 2025, the Ozempic label was updated to state that it is not recommended in patients with severe gastroparesis, but does not indicate that the drug itself may cause the condition. November 2024, plaintiffs filed a comprehensive master complaint alleging that GLP-1 manufacturers failed to adequately warn patients. November 2025, the MDL grows to 2,914 pending cases. 2027 projected. First bellwether trials expected to go before federal juries. Frequently asked questions about GLP-1 lawsuits. Can I sue if I only experience mild nausea or vomiting? Symptoms that are listed as side effects like diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, etc. typically don't qualify for lawsuits unless they became severe, persistent, and required hospitalization or led to diagnosed conditions like gastroparesis. What if I stopped taking the medication months or years ago? Many patients continue to experience symptoms long after discontinuing the medication. As long as your injury occurred during or shortly after GLP-1 use and is documented in medical records, you may still qualify. Do I need to prove my doctor didn't warn me? No. Even if your doctor said the drug was safe, manufacturers are responsible for providing adequate warnings. Your claim would generally target the company, not the prescribing physician, unless there's clear medical negligence. Are gallbladder injuries eligible? Novo Nordisk added a gallbladder warning in March of 2022. This effectively disqualifies anyone with gallbladder complications who took the drug after March 2022 for federal MDL inclusion. What if I took a compounded version of semaglutide? Lawsuits primarily target brand name manufacturers. However, some lawsuits against healthcare providers involve medical malpractice claims tied to off-label use of compounded medications. How long will the lawsuit take? The first GLP-1 lawsuits are unlikely to go before federal juries until at least 2027. However, settlement negotiations could occur sooner as evidence develops. Will I have to testify in court? Most cases settle before trial. If yours goes to trial, your attorney will prepare you thoroughly. However, being part of an MDL means only selected bellwether cases go to trial first. Can I still file if the statute of limitations passed? Possibly. Some states have discovery rules that extend deadlines to when you discovered, or should have discovered, the connection between your injury and GLP-1 use. Consult an attorney immediately to assess your specific situation. Take action. Protect your rights today. If you or a loved one suffered gastroparesis, vision loss, or other serious complications from GLP-1 medications, time is critical. Then there's a list of steps to take. The author, Sarah Klein, JD, is a licensed attorney and legal content strategist with over 12 years of experience across civil, criminal, family, and regulatory law. At All About Lawyer, she covers a wide range of legal topics from high-profile lawsuits and courtroom stories to state traffic laws and everyday legal questions, all with a focus on accuracy, clarity, and public understanding. Her writing blends real legal insight with plain English explanations, helping readers stay informed and legally aware. From ACB.org, posted December 11th, ADA Notification Bills. Over the years, Congress has introduced bills generally referred to as ADA notification bills. These bills have called for the creation of a policy where a business would have a set amount of time to be put on alert about an ADA violation. During that time frame, they would have the opportunity to remedy the violation. One of the best-known examples of such a bill was the passage of the House Bill H.R. 620 in 2018. Much of the disability community has openly spoken out against such bills. The responsibility would be to be put on the person with the disability to notify the business. The clock would then start ticking to give the company time to fix these accessibility problems. Persons with disabilities do not want such a responsibility. Furthermore, the patron would also have to wait an extended amount of time to access the product or service while it is made accessible. In the 2018 bill, businesses would be given 90 days to remedy the access challenge. A similar bill was introduced again this week, December 9th, by Congress members Lawler from New York and Correa from California, C-O-R-R-E-A. Correa is a former sponsor of such bills. Under the new bill text, businesses would only be given 30 days. ACB will follow the movement of this bill closely. If you live in either of these Congress members' districts, we encourage you to reach out and express the dangers of the bill. To read the full press release, access the bill, visit https://lawler.house.gov/news/document/single.aspx query document ID=5157, and I will read that next. From lawler.house.gov, Lawler and Correa unveil ADA reform to boost access and protect small businesses. Dateline, December 9. Today, Congressman Mike Lawler, New York, 17, and Congressman Lou Correa, California, 46, announced the introduction of bipartisan legislation to ensure ADA violations are quickly rectified, to provide renewed access for disabled individuals and protect all parties involved from drawn-out litigation. Specifically, the ADA 30 Days to Comply Act will create a process for disabled individuals to notify businesses directly about ADA violations, allowing these entities a 30-day remediation window to address the issue or show significant progress if a longer period is needed. The ADA was created to guarantee access and protect the rights of Americans with disabilities, not to fuel drive-by lawsuits that do nothing to actually fix the problem. Our bill creates a simple, fair process for navigating an ADA violation so that the business gets notified and have 38 days to make it right. That means quicker compliance, better access, and fewer bad faith lawsuits that punish well-intentioned small businesses, said Congressman Lawler. Maximizing accessibility has always been one of my priorities. This bill assures that small businesses, family-owned businesses, have the incentive, opportunity, and financial ability to comply with ADA requirements, Congressman Correa said. This legislation is a win-win. It helps mom-and-pop shops best serve their customers and expands accessibility in our neighborhoods. AAHOA's nearly 20,000 member hoteliers are deeply committed to accessibility, yet they continue to face a surge in serial drive-by ADA lawsuits that do nothing to improve access. The ADA 30 Days to Comply Act gives businesses a fair chance to fix issues quickly while still protecting the rights of disabled Americans. It's a practical, bipartisan, and sagacious solution that replaces litigation with collaboration, a sound approach that strengthens compliance and stops opportunistic abuse of the system. We appreciate Representatives Lawler and Correa for advancing this truly commonsensical reform, said AAHOA President and CEO Laura Lee Blake. Small businesses are all too often the target of sue and settle schemes. Bad actors know that small business owners can't afford to hire attorneys and fight them in court, and will instead settle even if they did nothing wrong. NFIB applauds Congressman Lawler for introducing this common sense legislation, which will allow small businesses to the opportunity to fix minor issues before being slapped with major lawsuits, said Jeff Brabant, Brabant, NFIB Vice President of Federal Government Relations. I applaud Representatives Lawler and Correa for introducing this bipartisan legislation that will provide a common sense solution to ensuring small businesses can comply with ADA rules and avoid unfair and costly litigation. The ADA 30 Days to Comply Act will help protect small businesses and Americans with disabilities, stated Todd McCracken, President and CEO of the National Small Business Association. The construction industry is committed to fostering a business climate that enhances opportunities for all companies and employees. The ADA 30 Days to Comply Act provides the mutually beneficial opportunity for well-intentioned employers to remedy inadvertent oversights before final adjudication and allowing for those oversights to be addressed sooner, said President of Government Relations Alex Etchen, ECHEN, Associated General Contractors, AGC of America. Full text of the bill can be found at a hot link. Congressman Lawler is one of the most bipartisan members of Congress and represents New York's 17th Congressional District, which is just north of New York City and contains all or parts of Rockland, Putnam, Dutchess, and Westchester counties. He was rated the most effective freshman lawmaker in the 118th Congress, eighth overall, surpassing dozens of committee chairs. Research news from FightingBlindness.org. Belite Bio, B-E-L-I-T-E, to seek FDA approval for its Stargardt disease drug. Belite Bio, a biopharmaceutical company developing drugs for retinal degenerative diseases, plans to seek approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, for Tinlarebant, T-I-N-L-A-R-E-B-A-N-T. It's oral drug designed to slow disease progression and vision loss for people with Stargardt disease. The company plans to file a new drug application, NDA, for the drug with the FDA in the first half of 2026. Belite is also seeking regulatory approval for Tinlarebant in the UK and China. In its global Phase 3 DRAGON clinical trial, Tinlarebant reduced the growth rate of atrophic lesions, areas of central retinal cell loss, by 36% for patients receiving the drug compared to those getting a placebo. Visual acuity for patients in DRAGON was stable across the trial regardless of treatment group, which was expected given the natural history of Stargardt disease for the population enrolled. The 104 patients, ages 12 to 20 in the trial, were randomized 2-to-1 to receive Tinlarebant or a placebo. Results were reported after 24 months of treatment. Tinlarebant is designed to inhibit retinol binding protein 4, RBP4, to reduce the uptake of vitamin A into the retina, thereby decreasing the production and accumulation of toxic byproducts from vitamin A processing, which are the hallmark of Stargardt disease. The condition is usually caused by mutations of the gene ABCA4. Stargardt disease affects approximately 30,000 people in the U.S., while the severity and rate of progression of the condition can vary, it usually causes significant central vision loss. ProgStar, the largest ever natural history study of patients with Stargardt disease, was used to inform the DRAGON clinical trial design. Funded by the foundation, ProgStar was launched in 2013 and prospectively followed 259 patients for 2 years. The study's retrospective arm enrolled 251 patients. Belite is currently enrolling Stargardt disease patients ages 12 to 20 in its Phase 2 and 3 DRAGON 2 clinical trial for Tinlarebant, taking place at sites in the U.S., U.K., and Japan. The company has also fully enrolled its global Phase 3 Phoenix clinical trial for Tinlarebant for patients with geographic atrophy, the advanced form of dry age-related macular degeneration. Closing with another study for best disease from fighting blindness, Opus Genetics launches gene therapy clinical trial for best disease. Opus Genetics, a biopharmaceutical company developing gene therapies for inherited retinal diseases, has dosed the first person in its BIRD 1, Phase 1 and 2 gene therapy clinical trial for people with best vitelliform macular dystrophy, BVMD, or autosomal recessive best retinopathy, ARB, caused by mutations in the gene BEST1. BIRD1 will enroll 10 patients and evaluate 2 doses of the gene therapy. The trial is being conducted by Mark Panessi, MD, PhD, at the Retina Foundation of the Southwest and the surgical team of Kenneth Fan, MD, and others. Okay, I've run out of time for this week's Vision News. Hope you enjoyed listening. I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. Please join us next week. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.